Like a stormy summer wind. Now I'm falling like the rain. Oh, what a sweet surprise. When your heart makes a sound like rolling thunder, and your arms are wrapped around an angel from above, and when the earth begins to shake, it can feel the love you made. Oh, that's how you know when you're in love.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franz, and concerns over election security growing a day after ballot boxes in Washington and Oregon were set on fire. A new nationwide poll finds that Americans are more concerned about election integrity. ABC's Jim Ryan has a look.
86% of registered voters of both parties in the AP North Center poll believe the losing candidate in next week's presidential election is obligated to accept the result. But only one in three voters, Republicans and Democrats, think that Donald Trump will concede if he loses. 77% believe that Kamala Harris will concede if she loses.
With 1 week left before Election Day, presidential candidates are working on their closing messages. Vice President Kamala Harris delivers a speech in Washington, D.C. tonight. Former President Trump is in the battleground state of Pennsylvania. Nearly 100 people were killed in the latest Israeli strike in northern Gaza, many of them women and children sheltering at a building. The IDF says they are targeting Hamas. This is ABC News. As we head into winter, demand for gasoline typically drops. This year, other factors could mean a sizable drop in gas prices.
When Israel avoided Iran's oil production and its retaliatory strike, relief was almost immediately felt in the global oil markets. Oil prices are coming down with Israel's strike over and with weak demand for oil around the world. As a result, gas prices are coming down quickly, down about 5 cents in the past week. The Energy Department reports the average price for regular unleaded is now at $3.10 a gallon nationwide, with analysts predicting gas prices under $3 a gallon soon in much of the U.S. The cheapest gas right now is along the Gulf Coast at $2.65 a gallon. Alex Stone, ABC News.
There is record heat in the middle of the country where temperatures could be up 25 degrees above normal. That heat will move east, which means some trick-or-treaters on Halloween could see record highs, expected to be in the 70s in New York and Boston. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
Everyone on the road is trying to make it to their destination safely. You can help by staying aware of the large trucks and buses around you. They take longer to stop, have large blind spots, and make wide turns that require caution from other drivers. It takes all of us working together to share the road safely. Learn more at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov. Paid for by FMCSA.
Imagine your team always looking and feeling their best in high-performance technical workwear. Cintas can make it happen. They have garments for almost every job imaginable. And with the Cintas Workwear program, you get freshly laundered garments delivered every week for everyone on your team. Great garments without the bother of laundry. That's a real perk for employees. Find out how Cintas can boost team image and morale. Visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
Wisconsin Radio Network News, I'm Ted Ayland. There's been a nearly 40% increase in early in-person absentee voting over 2020 in Wisconsin. Wood County Clerk and Wisconsin County Clerks Association President Trent Miner says all those absentee ballots mean we likely won't know the outcome of the presidential election in the state until the morning after Election Day.
Because it's just going to take them that long to push that many ballots through the machines to get the tabulation out.
Clerks Association supported a bipartisan bill to allow the processing of early ballots to begin on Monday. It passed the state assembly but failed to advance in the Senate. Voters in some Wisconsin school districts are facing big funding requests on their ballots.
Department of Public Instruction data indicates at least 121 districts putting referendum questions before voters, including some with more than one on the same ballot. That's the case in Madison Metropolitan Schools, requesting $100 million over 4 years for operations, and a second referendum requesting facilities bonds totaling $507 million over 23 years. There's more than a dozen Milwaukee area districts with referendums, and in the Green Bay area public schools, voters are being asked to approve a $183 million capital referendum to address school safety and renovations. Bob Haig, Wisconsin Radio Network.
If you need assistance with energy or heating bills, the Wisconsin Public Service Commission encourages you to act now before the disconnection moratorium kicks in. Bureau of Consumer Affairs Director Brad Rose says customers should contact their utility provider to make a payment or arrange a payment plan.
The winter moratorium runs from November 1st till April 15th. And so during this time, a utility service that affects the main heat source cannot be disconnected for non-payment.
More information is available on the Public Service Commission website. You're listening to Wisconsin Radio Network News.
I'm Terry Schoonover, candidate for Assembly in District 29, which runs along the Mississippi River from Trempealeau in the south to Prescott in the north and over to Blair in the east. For 20 years, I worked in emergency management. I learned you can't do it by yourself. You have to listen. You have to work with all the agencies that have a piece of the action. You have to respect each other. I want to take that experience to Madison, help break the gridlock, get people working together, get stuff done. I'd appreciate your vote for Assembly on November 5th, paid for by Schoonover for 8029, Bill Brueger, Treasurer.
This is AM 1430 WRDN, Duran Mondovi at Wabasha. The following program was pre-recorded.
A global dairy market, Fourth Amendment protections, an NRCS case that cannot rely on in-house expertise, 45Z tax credits and what crops might qualify, tariffs and ag trade deficits, man, that's all on the agenda for today's conversation, and that's all before this guy hits us with the news of the day.
Live with only 7 shopping days until Election Day, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll begin with a conversation with Farm Journal wordsmith Chris Bennett. Then it's Mitchell Hora from Continuum Ag. Later, Betty Resnick from the American Farm Bureau Federation. And directly following the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm a handsome newsman, Davis Michelson, and now... here's the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Lowry.
All right, Davis. Hey, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And welcome to AgriTalk. Boy, I tell you, this list of items that we've got to talk about today, here's the deal. Every now and then, the headline conversations that take place, I feel like it needs a little bit of background. To completely understand all the issues that farmers are challenged to understand, we need to get a little additional background. So we're going to do that on a couple of the conversations today. Betty Resnick from AFBF is going to be here to talk about some ag trade deficit and what is leading that. Now, I understand she's got some updated numbers, so I'm looking forward to the conversation with Betty. 45Z tax credits. How many times have we talked about this in the last 10 shows, Davis?
Yeah.
It seems like it's coming up all the time. Yeah. It is coming up all of the time because it is that important. Well, Mitchell's coming with some new perspective on that, and the old Farm Journal watchdog is after it again, man. He's got a couple of stories that I want to talk about today. A new one on agweb.com just this morning is talking about a battle between a South Dakota farmer and the NRCS up there in South Dakota that's been going on for 20 years. Oh. 20 years. Now, wow. Remember Chevron deference and the Supreme Court decision on that, saying that, you know, any of the three, four-letter agencies, federal agencies, cannot rely on in-house expertise in their decision and implementation of the laws, rules, and regulations. Well, that's part of what is being challenged right now. So we're going to get into that with Chris Bennett. Okay, excellent. Let's get to the news. What do you got, buddy?
Well, the National Weather Service is looking for moderate to heavy snow over parts of the northern and central Rockies today. Temperatures will be 20 to 35 degrees above average over parts of the central plains to the Great Lakes and Ohio Valley. Can confirm, by the way. There is a slight risk of severe thunderstorms over parts of the middle and lower Mississippi Valley, central southern plains on Wednesday. And here locally in Kansas City, USA, we're looking at 73 degrees. Kind of hazy, I would call it. But man, the wind really picked up overnight. Windy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is windy. It's windy here in northeast Iowa, too. 72 degrees. Look at that.
All right. All right. Well, with 1 week until Election Day, Vice President Kamala Harris is set to deliver a pivotal campaign speech at the Ellipse near the White House. Meanwhile, former President Donald Trump will be rallying supporters in Pennsylvania, visiting Drexel Hill and Allentown. Voter turnout is already surging, Chip, with over 43 million ballots cast across 47 states and the District of Columbia. Federal investigators are probing coordinated arson incidents targeting ballot boxes in Portland, Oregon, and Vancouver, Washington, destroying hundreds of ballots. Authorities believe the attacks were targeted and intentional, and they come amid heightened warnings from the FBI and Department of Homeland Security about potential election-related violence driven by voter fraud grievances. Only in Portland,
there are,
right, Chip?
Oh, there maybe are Vancouver, cameras, too. There are cameras everywhere. How does this guy or this person think that they are going to get away with this? It just, it blows my mind. Yeah.
Well, President Joe Biden will visit the Port of Baltimore in Maryland today to announce a $3 billion Inflation Reduction Act investment aimed at improving and electrifying port infrastructure across the United States. Republican lawmakers have called on USDA to provide explanations regarding the oversight of Pure Prairie Poultry, Inc., which filed for bankruptcy shortly after receiving substantial USDA funding. The situation has raised concerns about the department's management of grants and loans, as well as its impact on farmers and the poultry industry. The Minnesota-based chicken company received $45.6 million in USDA funding in 2022. That was to expand its processing plant in Charles City, Iowa.
Okay, those birds that were euthanized in Iowa, it was not only because of processing capacity. Tyson was ready to buy them, but it sounds like there was an argument over how the profits would be split from those birds. And so they ended up just killing them. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, the U.S. Department of Energy announced a new solicitation to purchase up to 3 million barrels of oil for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. This move comes in response to recent price declines in oil markets and aims to replenish the nation's emergency oil stockpile. Delivery expected to take place in April and May. Chip, let's go to Karen on that note.
All right. Yeah, very good. Thank you. Let's bring her in. Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Hey, Chip.
All right, so we talked briefly last week about what you learned at the World Dairy Summit. Let's continue that conversation today. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, there was, of course, a lot of takeaways. But, you know, Chip, from climate variability and market composition, policy, economics, we can talk about a lot of things. And it's not just impacting regions like the United States or North America. It's regions across the globe. They're navigating under a complex set of circumstances. And there's a lot of parallels. Like, for example, in South America in 2010, 60% of the farms were producing about 27% of the milk supply. Today, Chip, that figure sits at 48% of the farms, so nearly half, and that's 13% of the milk supply. And then in Germany, they're saying that farms with less than 100 dairy cows are more likely to go out of business. I think that's probably mimics here in the United States. But what they're saying is farms that are greater than 100 cows are not necessarily showing signs to expand or to grow, because they're noting that uncertainty in the future policy and regulations is making it, it's playing a factor in the, their decision making. So the takeaway is policy solutions must be cost effective to farmers, whether you're in the United States or you're across the globe. And in 2021, Africa, as we talked last week, their imports stood at about $5 billion. And so all eyes are on Africa, not just the United States, because they know that this is a huge emerging market. So I say the takeaway is two things: collaboration and, you know, everybody's going to look at how they're going to grow exports, North America included. And so we've got to make sure that our U.S. dairy products are just exceptional as they are. But we can't keep, we got to keep an eye on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would imagine that quality does have something to do with the fact that the U.S. is a successful exporter of dairy products. Karen, good stuff.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks.
All right. Get more on what happened in Paris at the World Dairy Summit. Go to www.dairyherd.com. Okay, we're talking land rights next. Chris Bennett from Farm Journal.
CattleCon's headed to San Antonio, February 4th through 6th, 2025, where farmers and ranchers gather to shape our industry's future. Remember, if you ain't at the table, you might just be on the menu. Check out the latest in ranching at the Texas-sized NCBA trade show. Network, learn, and grow your operation. Don't miss this chance to steer the cattle biz in San Antonio, where the Alamo spirit lives on. Visit convention.ncba.org to get registered. CattleCon 2025, where the beef industry meets.
Always up early, always getting the job done, always working as hard as you can, always pushing for more, because you never settle. For farmers who seek outstanding performance they can count on, the only brand is DeKalb Corn, featuring a broad portfolio of products precision bred to maximize profit potential on every field. DeKalb brand, never settle. See us at DeKalb.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
For some farmers, soybeans are on their mind 24/7. If you're all about the beans, then Asgrow brand is all about you. That's why we've dedicated ourselves to developing truly localized products. Products with leading genetics and top-tier weed management. Products that maximize the profit potential on every acre you've got. You're serious about soybeans, and we're serious about your success. Visit Asgrow.com. It's all about the beans. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
In tough times, invest in what pays, like the InZone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
The moisture increase has been a huge benefit for us. We are hauling out more bushels than we hauled in. Who doesn't want to add more money back into your crop?
Call 712-520-6061.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
What's the first thing?
Tax season is just around the corner. Let the experienced tax professionals at Sunstrom & Company in downtown Durand help you explore ways you can save money on your taxes. Sunstrom & Company works with farms, corporations, family-owned businesses, and individuals to make your tax headaches disappear. Call or visit Sunstrom today for an appointment at their Main Street Durand location next to the Courier Wedge. Sunstrom & Company, local accountants providing quality tax and financial management since 1980.
Dairy farmers, extend the life of your investment and keep the milk inspector happy when you resurface your mangers, feed bunks, feed carts, and more with a microepoxy surface from Osteoplastics and Supply. The microepoxy surface provides for easier cleaning of feed bunks, less feed waste, offers a non-skid surface, and withstands extreme temperatures and chemicals. You can repair your floors and equipment for less than replacing, and the increased milk production will pay for the installation. Find out more. Visit osteoplastics.com.
Hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad you're with us on this Tuesday morning for a conversation with Chris Bennett from Farm Journal and AgWeb.com. Chris, welcome back to AgriTalk, my friend. How are you doing?
Chip, good morning, brother. It's a privilege to be on here with you.
Excellent. Glad that you're here. Chris, you always do a great job watchdogging some of the issues out there for us, and there are a couple of stories that you've published recently, including just one this morning. But I want to start off talking about this story about the Thomas family out in Pennsylvania and the fact that, geez, it seems to me like Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commissioner or Commission officer, he might need a lesson or two in the Fourth Amendment. Tell us about this.
Yes, sir. It cuts to the heart of what private property ownership is. When I heard the details, I had to do a double take, make sure I was understanding correctly. Many of your listeners, Chip, will know about open fields and the government's claim that they have a right to enter your greater private property. This is that, but on steroids. Thomas had land on a lake. He had land on navigable waters, and the state, by statute, in other words, they can point to code. They can literally point to the words in the law in Pennsylvania, claim the right, and they did so, to come onto his land, to search his private property without warrant, without probable cause, without consent, literally, right up to his doorstep. They did not enter his home, but they, I guess you could say in a roundabout way, they did everything else, Chip. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when you get right down to this, Chris, I mean, this officer was thinking that the landowner was breaking the rules, and I think it was fishing with too many fishing poles, something like that. But it's almost like he had a vendetta against this landowner, and he used the power of his office to pursue it.
Right. And there's greater questions here as well. If the state Boat and Fish Commission or any power of the state, any office of the state can come onto your land in Pennsylvania via navigable waters, then you have this wide open door that essentially is meaningless. In other words, okay, I've got an acre beside a lake. What if I've got two? What if I've got 1,000 acres of farmland beside water? Does the government with a straight face claim to have the right to come to my doorstep? And they do. Now, like always, Chip, when I asked State of Pennsylvania, could I please have comment on this case? It was a no. Litigation is ongoing. I would bet my bank account right now that when litigation is over, they still will not comment on the case. And also, there's another thing that I always ask, Chip, and that is, hey, forget the case. I'll push that off the table. Could y'all please explain your policy on private land, what you're allowed to do? The answer to that, almost invariably, almost 100%, Chip, regardless of which case it is also, it's a big no.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris, what really grabbed your attention on this story, then, and what makes it a story that needs to be known on a national basis?
I'll tell you exactly what it is, Chip. In the last, I'm going to say 20, 30 years, maybe it's the advent of the internet. But we as Americans are reading a code. We are hearing through the news or social media about these cases. And we also have pro bono organizations that are pushing some of these cases. The Tim Thomas case that we're talking about right now, the only reason I've heard about it, the only reason you've heard about it, is that Institute for Justice took the case pro bono. Otherwise, Thomas, like all private property owners, and all, like almost all farmland owners that get in disputes with the government, have to roll and simply have to accept what the government says.
Yeah.
So after 30, 40 years of this, all of us are asking basic questions. What does the government claim regarding their power? Because they have none, just like they have no money. They have what we give them, and same with money. They have what we give them. So it's time, I think, most people feel, to simply have the government lay out what they feel they can do, and they don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah, they have the power that that the people give them and that the courts give them. And that is also being challenged up in South Dakota right now. And because a lot of the government agencies had determined what power they had on their by themselves for a lot of years. And that's being challenged now up in South Dakota, right?
Right. It's a wetlands case that's been going on for 20 years. Again, let me start out by saying this gentleman named Arlen Foster in Minor County, Southeast South Dakota, has pro bono representation. Otherwise, yep, his case also falls through the cracks. And the stunning part of his case is that it really lays naked what has been going on in these wetlands disputes, particularly because Foster's case is a half an acre. It's literally 0.8 acres that the government has put the clamps on. He has very reasonable arguments. Even if you disagree with him or agree with him, his arguments are very rational regarding why there is less than a foot of water sometimes on this particular spot out in this corn and soybean fields. But the kicker is, Chip, that he's never been allowed in court to simply present what he believes is going on. Of course, and that relates to Chevron deference, the government's yep ability to rely on its own experts. When that got tossed here recently, his case, along with the case that got it tossed in the Supreme Court, got a little bit of steroid injected into it. So now Arden's case goes to the Eighth Circuit, or back to the Eighth Circuit, and they are, on instruction by the Supreme Court, supposed to let him have his day to state what he believes is going on. Doesn't mean he will ultimately win, but it does mean that he will have the ear of the court.
Yes. Yes, and he will be able to present the evidence that he has been collecting for more than 20 years that this is not a natural wetland, and instead it's a man-made structure like a stock pond for cattle. The evidence seems pretty clear-cut to me, but at least now he gets an opportunity to present the evidence that he's been collecting. That's so important, right?
Correct. Just like the Tim Thomas case regarding property rights, the wetlands case regarding code and the ability of agencies and departments to keep things in-house, these cases that these farmers and landowners are bringing, they ask baseline question, which is this what our forefathers intended when the Constitution was framed in 1787? Is this what Madison meant when he laid out the Bill of Rights? I think those two questions answer themselves. And again, through social media, through the internet now, the government can't quite keep the clamps down on these questions being raised. And they are very, very legitimate questions to all of us as Americans.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what we're talking about here is just the basic ability to protect your property rights and the rights that you gain when you purchase a piece of property and develop it. It can be really frustrating. And the Fosters fighting this battle for the last 20 years, Chris, it blows me away. It blows me away. Go ahead, Chris.
No, it doesn't pass the smell test, Chip.
Right.
It does not pass the smell test. There's something afoul, and I must emphasize that if you were to call a government agency, let's just take NRCS off the table, USDA, and put another one in there and say, okay, how many cases involving X have there been in the last 20 years? And in NRCS's case, that would be, you know, how many wetlands prosecutions, enforcements, regulations do you have? I'm just picking a state out of the blue, South Dakota, where Arlen Foster lives. Yeah. If I would submit to you, you will not get a response. And if you do, you will get a response that is not straight. The only cases, essentially, that you have access to are those which get litigated. And a property owner, a farmer, that can go, has the legwork, has the financial legs to take the government to court year upon year, almost non-existent. So it must be said
that
Orange Foster case, the tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely. Chris, good work. Go to agweb.com and read Chris's stories.
What's a corn farmer's favorite dog?
A husky.
Some things shouldn't be flat. But with GHX, you can maximize your acres with one flat price. While other brands sell by the bag, we sell seed by the acre to maximize your yield and profit potential. Our custom seed recommendations combine extensive product characterization and agronomic expertise to get the right product, population, and placement, all for one flat price per acre. Learn how at ghxseed.com/connect.
If you're applying a low-rate nitrogen stabilizer, you might be falling for a losing strategy. Low-rate products promise great results, but may lack the potency of higher active ingredient concentrations. So great isn't always what you get. Instead of putting your yield at risk, put your trust in Anvil Nitrogen Stabilizer and Super U Premium Fertilizer from Koch Agronomic Services. Both offer higher active ingredient concentrations imitator brands can't match. See the difference at defendyourn.com.
Farmers, it's harvest time, and the last thing you need is downtime while waiting for parts for your equipment. Need custom hydraulic hoses and fittings? See Durand Napa. Need hard-to-find parts? See Durand Napa. Need bulk oil or hydraulic fluid? See Durand Napa. Durand Napa also has filters with low prices throughout the entire year and has specialty tools for your equipment. Keep your equipment working throughout the harvest with Napa Know-How from Durand Napa, Madison Street, Durand.
Milk markets are mostly lower with this WRDN market update. I'm Brian Winnikins. At the Mercantile Exchange, November milk up 13 to 2026, December down 14 to 1996, January and February down 2, January at 1990, February 1979. Meanwhile, live and feeder cattle markets moving mostly lower today as the cash market has yet to develop and boxed beef prices are lower. Traders have opted to be cautious in both live and feeder cattle markets. Hog markets moving mostly higher. Continued strong consumer demand continues to help the market. October live cattle down 67 cents to 189.50. October feeder cattle down 15 cents to 249.92. December hogs up 230 to 82.92. Chicago Board of Trade corn markets higher, strengthened wheat spilling over into the corn markets as well. Plus, ethanol margins are continuing to stay range bound. Soybeans are moving mostly lower again. No bad weather for the South American planting progress, and that continues to pressure beans. Wheat markets are higher after becoming a bit oversold. MATIF wheat prices also higher. That supports prices. December corn up 3.5 to 414 and a quarter. Meanwhile, new crop 25 up 1 to 440 and a half. November beans down 5 to 969. New crop 25 down 2 and a quarter to 1019 and a half. December wheat up 13 and a half to 572 and a quarter. With markets, I'm Brian Winnikins.
At Jerry Bear and Sons, your Golden Harvest seed dealer, their best skill is knowing how to listen. Because once they understand your operation and goals, they can offer the right products to perform in your fields. From the Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to expert insights, it's an answer to what they have heard from you. Get fall cash discounts when you order your Golden Harvest seeds now at Jerry Bear and Sons, just off Highway 25, Durand.
Wisconsin soybean farmers are fueling Wisconsin. In 2021, the value of Wisconsin soybeans was $1.61 billion. That fuels our state's economy, communities, and Wisconsin's future. Wisconsin soybean farmers fuel our state, country, and the world while protecting the land and water. Learn how the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board and Wisconsin Soybean Association are working hard to fuel our farms and future. Visit WisconsinSoybean.org.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Yeah, kind of came back for a second cousin's wedding.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you were with us. Man, it's always fun to get Chris on here, isn't it, Davis?
Dude, I love it. Yeah. Always good stuff. But, you know, and the storytelling, let's not get lost in the storytelling, the story right. itself, because the things that he, I don't know how he finds these stories, but
well,
the stuff that he covers is so pertinent.
Exactly. The way that he does is he is always watching for these cases, these court cases, okay? Well, the problem with it, and the reason that it is difficult to put a number on just how many similar cases, similar conflicts have happened out there is like he said, it's because if you ask the, for example, South Dakota NRCS, how many of these land use cases have been prosecuted in the last 10 years, 20 years, you're probably not going to get an answer on that. But when an agency like the Pacific League or others, and the name of the group in Pennsylvania that is taking it on. But what they've got to do is these law offices have to take these cases on pro bono, okay? Otherwise the government agency just kind of outweighs you. You can go ahead and look for additional rulings on issues, but when under Chevron deference, the court would basically just say, listen, the reason that NRCS is pursuing this is because NRCS says this is the way that it should be done. That's why they're pursuing it. So we need to just defer to the expertise of NRCS. And I'm picking on NRCS here right now. I get it. But now with the court ruling, the Supreme Court ruling on Chevron deference, they can't do that anymore. They have to allow this. They have to allow the evidence to be presented, and when you've got the wherewithal to do that, it is being presented. All right, we've spent a fair amount of time on 45Z recently as well, for good reason. Tax credit is available to registered producers starting January 1, 2025, but here's the problem. The details of what crops, what production practices, you know, the stuff that's needed to feed the biofuel production. We don't know what those details are. We're waiting for those details, not from USDA, but from the Treasury Department and IRS. The USDA is trying to have some influence on this, but let's get an update now from Mitchell Hora at Continuum Ag. Mitchell, welcome back to AgriTalk, my friend. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Always good to be here with you. And yeah, still needing more of these rules to create some clarity. Yeah. But, I mean, I think USDA understands the urgency of that. And, you know, obviously things are going to be changing in D.C. here soon. You know, no matter what ends up happening next week with election, there's still going to be changes to be made. And so the clock is ticking. That's for sure.
Yeah. So get us up to speed on this, Mitchell. What do we need to know about this process? As I understand it, there's going to be get us up to speed.
Yeah. So it's a couple of things that have happened here over the last couple of months. So the USDA put out a request for information this summer, and they had like 26 questions that they were asking for feedback on, and people were able to submit their written comment. And we submitted comment as Continuum Ag, and about 260 other folks did as well. A lot of comments about what the USDA should do. And now they have ingested that feedback, that written feedback. And here over the last month or so, month and a half, they've hosted three public hearings. They were Zoom meetings. about an hour to an hour and a half in length, and they let people share their comments verbally to the USDA, sharing, you know, their thoughts and ideas about how the USDA should approach 45Z and how they should write rules. And now it's our understanding that USDA is ingesting those written comments and verbal comments and trying to put some guidance together to help the Department of Treasury with the final 45Z rules.
Okay. Have they got the right, are they all pointed in the right direction here, Mitchell? And what I mean by that is in one of your comments, you talked about maybe, you know, climate smart farming and carbon intensity. They should be two different things, right?
Yeah. So I think, so we're having a lot of conversation with USDA folks. They've been great to, you know, try to really get this done right. I think the weight of this decision is massive, and the ripple effect that this 45Z program can have is just tremendous. So, but what we are seeing is that this administration has been very keen on this concept of climate smart ag and climate smart commodities. We saw the $3 billion go out in grants. We've seen the Climate Smart Ag pilot program introduced within the 40B guidance. And now we know that they would like to write some rules and kind of define climate smart ag and write a rule about that. But a climate smart commodity or climate smart ag and low carbon feedstocks for biofuels, they're not the same thing. They might have some overlap. They might be kind of similar. You know, cover crops and no-till and stuff is probably going to be included in language around both. But they're not the same thing. And we're trying to make that very clear to the USDA folks that defining climate smart ag, that's fine. But defining carbon, how to define the, or putting together a rule about quantifying carbon intensity of feedstocks is different. And defining carbon intensity of feedstocks is already being done using the Argonne National Labs GREET model. And that's what we encourage them to use. It's very available now. And even just at Continuum Ag, we've scored over 330 million bushels using that GREET model. It's not hard to do. We can do it for free. It takes like 5 minutes. So it's a very scalable thing here. But yeah, like I said, I think they're being held up a little bit on climate smart versus CI scoring. And they need to just simplify things.
Well, and with 40B, the problem with 40B is that it set a precedent. It bundled up these production practices and said, there, that's what it takes to be eligible for these tax credits. Now, what we would like them to do is to have some flexibility on that going forward, right?
For sure. Yep. And in the public comments, it came up all the time. It was probably one of the biggest things that people were suggesting and giving feedback on was overwhelmingly saying, do not use bundles, use the GREET model. Right. It's as simple as that. And in the 40B guidance, it literally says that they're using those bundles in lieu of using an actual CI calculator. It's like, guys, You punted before. 40B was only a 2-year thing. It really didn't make that big of an impact, but it was an indicator. And obviously now in the written comment was overwhelming, saying, hey, don't use the bundle approach. And all that does is just stifle farmer innovation and just waters down the whole concept. Climate smart ag could be different bundles. That's fine. But that's different than quantifying carbon intensity of feedstocks. That's why there's a need for separation, yet similarities is fine, but it needs to be separate.
Yeah, and it is quantifiable, and you were showing that it is quantifiable on millions and millions and millions of bushels, the carbon intensity. So therefore, we need to go forward with that, and the GREET model is part of that. What is your level of optimism, Mitchell, that 45Z is going to turn into something, turn into a meaningful opportunity for farmers?
I still think it's the biggest opportunity out there. And I think as farmers, we need some light at the end of the tunnel. We need some opportunities ahead. And 45Z is still by far the biggest opportunity, the financial impact, the ripple effect that's going to have, really highlighting American ag as leading in this sustainability effort like we have been doing already for decades. Now we can just tell our story. But yeah, I see it as having just tremendous financial impact, and it's in a ripple effect that's going to go beyond corn and soybeans. It's going to go beyond biofuels. It's going to go beyond the U.S. And I'm already seeing a lot of these conversations happen. So that's why the message today, though, for farmers is pay attention to 45Z. It's going to have massive implications when it does come through. It likely will have massive implications unless they do screw it up and go with bundles and stuff and make the rules not conducive, which there's groups that are advocating for that. There were some of those groups on these hearings as well. There's plenty of folks out there that don't like row crop ag. They don't like what we're doing as American farmers. They don't like biofuels, and that's fine. Like, that's what the hearings are for, is to give your comment. Now, luckily those were the very, very small minority, but those folks have loud voices in DC as well. But this can do a lot of good, and that's why we want them to get the rules done.
Yep. Yeah. And number one, start, if you haven't been documenting what you're doing on your farm, document it. Right, that's the starting point.
It all takes data, whether it's a tax credit or any other program. It all takes data. Yep. That's what farmers
absolutely are. Mitchell, thank you so much, buddy. Stay, keep us up to date.
Wait. Well, now, which would you rather have? World-class seed genetics and traits, or seed that's been tested and proven to yield in your area? Well, with Pioneer, you get both, plus the support of a dedicated local team. For the unbeatable combination of elite seed genetics, local knowledge and insights, and rigorous local testing, contact the team at Bowers Seeds and Service, your local authorized Pioneer sales representative serving the Durand area. At Pioneer, our name is our mission, and what's next happens here.
Compeer Financial helped us get into our forever home.
They helped me expand more than acreage.
And helped our dairy grow for the next generation.
At Compeer Financial, we see potential in every plan. Our unique perspective finds solutions to your challenges, and our specially trained financial team guides you every step of the way. Partner with us to make your goals possible. Compeer.com. Compeer Financial ACA is an equal opportunity lender and equal opportunity provider, and MLS number 619731, copyright 2019, all rights reserved.
Eric Hovde's been caught lying again. Caught lying about Tammy Baldwin 20 times in his ads. The latest, quote, Hovde falsely claimed that Tammy Baldwin supports sex change surgery on minors. The truth? Tammy Baldwin doesn't support that, and there's no sex change surgeries on minors anywhere in Wisconsin. None. Hovde also lied about Baldwin, quote, giving our money to a transgender clinic. That's been found false 3 different times. The Journal Sentinel says the truth is Baldwin supported mental health funding for a homeless youth shelter. That's right. Hovde's attacking a place for homeless kids. We all know what Eric Hovde is doing. He's trying to scare you. But they are all lies. Wisconsin is better than this. We're not going to let some billionaire California banker lie his way into the United States Senate.
I'm Tammy Baldwin, running for Senate, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Tammy Baldwin for Senate.
Fall applications of nitrogen can be very efficient, but you've got to do it right. Joining us to talk about that, Dustin DeMoss from Nutrient. Dustin, how can growers up the odd that nitrogen applied in the fall will be there for the crop in the spring?
When you talk about fall application of nitrogen, obviously soil temperature is a very important factor that you need to pay attention to when you're considering fall application of nitrogen. We know that the 50 degree soil temperature mark is very important when thinking about fall nitrogen applications. When you're thinking about fall application of nitrogen, a product like ESN Smart Nitrogen can really protect your nitrogen from the environment, from multiple loss mechanisms throughout that winter season, and protect it until spring when the corn is going to begin demanding nitrogen.
Yeah, the ESN products, it does help to slow down the leaching process on nitrogen as well, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. ESN, being a polymer-coated urea, is fully encapsulated urea. That makes ESN a fully protected nitrogen product against all nitrogen loss mechanisms, including protection against leaching, protection against denitrification, and protection against volatilization.
All right. And what's the release period on the nitrogen from an ESN product?
ESN Smart Nitrogen, being a polymer-coated urea, the way it works is it's released at a rate that is dependent on soil temperature. So as long as the soil is below 50 degrees, you're going to have very, very minute release from ESN throughout the winter months. But when the springtime hits and the soil temperatures begin to rise, ESN will begin to release at a rate that is delivering nitrogen to the crop as it demands it.
Cool stuff, Dustin. Where can listeners go for more information?
For more information on ESN, you can go to our website at smartnitrogen.com.
Fantastic, Dustin. Dustin DeMoss with Nutrien.
Next on our Corn Hall of Fame tour, Pioneer brand Power Core Enlist corn.
Ooh, look at all the trophies.
Yes, Power Core Enlist wins in the field with an advanced combination of exclusive genetics, plus three distinct modes of action for long-lasting protection against above-ground pests and unsurpassed flexibility.
Whoa, this one says superior yield potential.
Don't touch, Billy.
Start your best year yet. Visit pioneer.com/no-pests.
Whatever crop you grow, we can help you protect it. Bootstrapped and ready to serve, Atticus delivers battle-tested chemistries, AIs that you've come to trust and rely on, from a manufacturer that strives to operate in a way that makes us accessible, responsive, and reliable. Our relevant portfolio is ready to protect your battlefields and livelihood. No matter the pest, weather, or politics, Atticus and your American farmer tenacity is battle-ready. Meet your ally, AticusLLC.com.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Atticus, providing battle-tested chemistries you know and trust.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Okay, we've covered the 45Z and gotten an update there from Mitchell. Another item that has generated a lot of conversation here lately is the potential use of tariffs by either a Harris or a Trump administration. It's kicked off a lot of conversation about how effective tariffs are. And even the American Soybean Association, National Corn Growers Association, commissioned a study on the effectiveness of tariffs. The best thing that this has done so far, in my opinion, is it's raised the conversation around trade. And the U.S. ag trade deficit. I was looking at an item from earlier this year talking about the likelihood that the U.S. would see a record ag trade deficit in 2024. Here to talk about that right now, Betty Resnick, American Farm Bureau Federation economist. Betty, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me today.
You bet. You bet. Okay. Record ag trade deficit in 2024. Is that still the projection?
Yes, the projection is changed slightly, but we're still projected to have a trade deficit of $30.5 billion in fiscal year 24, and an even bigger one in fiscal year 25.
Well, the projection for 2024, is it getting wider? Is it narrowing as time goes on this year? What's happening there?
I need to check back for some more recent numbers. They'll publish them in November again, but it's still big. In June, they had projected it to be $32 billion, and then in August, they walked it back a little bit to $30.5 billion, but still almost doubling the trade deficit from 2023.
Okay. Now, is this on a value basis? Is that right, or is it volume? Or is the trade deficit happening on both fronts?
So the trade deficit, when we talk about it from that figure put out by the USDA Economic Research Service, it's a value basis.
Okay.
And I think that makes it a little bit tricky to talk about, because what we import is a lot of really high value agricultural products like fresh fruits and vegetables and high end wine from Europe. But at the same time, we export a lot of bulk agricultural goods like soybeans and corn. And then the decrease in commodity prices is it's really plummeted our export values in recent years. But our volumes haven't necessarily fallen the same way.
Right, right. Yep. And volume has backed off some on the row crop exports. Corn, soy, well, corn has come back, obviously. But soybeans were losing more. Yeah, the soybeans were losing some of that market share out to Brazil and so on. Okay, you mentioned the high value items like fruits and vegetables. It when I look at the role that fruits and vegetables, horticulture products play in this trade deficit, it blows me away, Betty. How big of a chunk it is.
So about half of all of our agricultural imports by value are in the horticulture category, which, again, is made mostly fresh and processed fruits and vegetables, tree nuts, alcohol, essential oils, and flowers, et cetera, things like that. And that's about half of all of our values. And it's grown quite a bit. So it's about $100 billion. And we also export in that category, but this is the category we have the biggest deficit in. Our exports in horticulture were about $40 billion in fiscal year 24.
Okay. Why? I understand that these products, fruits and vegetables, are very labor intensive crops. Is that part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's also the seasonality of it all. I mean, American consumers today expect to eat blueberries every single week of the year, and we can't grow blueberries or store them every single week of the year. So there's a lot of different factors in this horticultural space, but you're absolutely right that labor is a huge part of that. So just to compare, overall for agriculture, labor is about 10% of the cost of production across the spectrum in the United States. But for fruit, it's a little under 40% of the cost of production. And for vegetables, it's a little under 30%. So the specialty crop growers in the United States are the ones really feeling the brunt of labor shortages right now.
Right, right. And it's some of the rules and regulations that are in place on those on the labor. I mean, the housing requirements, overtime requirements, all of that plays a role in adding to the labor costs, right?
Yeah, and a lot of the labor for specialty crop growers is coming from the H-2A program. We've seen huge growth in the H-2A program, which is really great as it is a way to access labor to help pick these crops. But it's also growing in cost quite a bit. The government sets an adverse effect wage rate, often called the AWER, and that is the minimum wage for H-2A workers in every state. And it's grown 5.9% annually since 2019, while national wages have grown under 4% annually. So it's outgrowing the pace of other wages, and it's really high. So H-2A workers in California earn $19.75 an hour in 2024, and that is about the same they would earn in a day's work in Mexico, for instance, if they're coming from there or other South American countries. So that's huge. And then in addition to that, you've got all the costs like you're alluding to on top of that, including transportation costs, housing costs, food costs, visa costs. It's not an inexpensive form of labor, but it is a reliable way to get laborers.
Okay. All right. The problem with this and the ag trade deficit in particular, people are saying, hey, let's use tariffs to fix this problem. I don't know if that's going to help fix this problem or not, Betty.
Yeah, especially with agricultural products in particular, there's just a lot of costs being had here.
Right.
I don't know if that music's coming from me or from you, but...
No, that's from us, Betty. We're getting really close. We've only got about 15 seconds left here.
Oh, but my apologies. Yeah, but no, I would say also, just in general, I mean, I think that there's multiple factors here and that we need to be supporting making our producers productive here at home, and that will help with the trade deficit. But the trade deficit in itself is not inherently a problem. As we import and export different products, we do need to find ways to export more of our products abroad, and that will help our producers here at home in addition to...
I am Rosario Dawson. Cancer can be a challenging journey, one that no one should take on alone. And Stand Up to Cancer wants to make sure no one has to. We bring together the best scientists and doctors to accelerate research, leading to more effective treatments, With each new advancement, we're getting closer than ever to our mission of making every cancer patient cancer-free. To get there even faster, we rely on the support from individuals like you, so that through our combined efforts, more patients and their loved ones will see that even though cancer may interrupt the journey, it doesn't have to determine the destination. The fight against cancer never stops. Thankfully, new and promising treatments can help save lives now. Let's go further together. Find out how you can join the mission. Learn more at standuptocancer.org/AA.
Liberal politician Kamala Harris wants to take your guns. She says it herself.
We have to have a buyback program, and I support a mandatory buyback program.
Mandatory buybacks? That's Washington speak for taking away your guns. More from Kamala.
Just because you legally possess a gun in your locked home doesn't mean that we're not going to walk into that home and check to see if you're being responsible.
Take Kamala at her word. Democrats will ban guns